Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Oh. Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig shit. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No.
No. No. And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
Usually, there's no crying in baseball. But tonight is different. The O's were well on their way to losing their season. But tonight, they may have lost so much more. The seriousness of Manny Machado's horrific injury is not yet known, but it could have him out for quite some time. Tonight is the worst night to have to get behind the mic and to talk Orioles baseball. So tonight, Birdland, it's okay. Tonight there's crying in baseball. And tonight the joy has left Mudville. Welcome to Bird's Eye View. That's right, this is Bird's Eye View, your source for a lack of insight and for baseless opinion. Today is September 23rd, 2013, and this is episode 54. My name is Jake English, and here to keep me sane, my rock, Scott Magnus. If you're listening to our voices, you're most likely hearing us at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. But it's also possible that you're listening to us at the Baltimore Sports Report Network, which you can find at baltimoresportsreport.com/network. You can find us at iTunes, at Bird's Eye View. You can also listen to us at other locations, Scott, like...
Miro, Stitcher, Double Twist, Sprained Ankle, ACL, MCL.
Whoa, a little heavy on the creamsicle joke. All right, you can also find us at Facebook at facebook.com/BEVcast. And please follow us on Twitter at Bird's Eye View, BAL. Appropriate for this evening, Scott, what is your drink of the week?
Oh, well, I thought it was a sad occasion last week in, you know, my aspect of being so depressed about where the Orioles were going. I didn't realize I was going to take it up a notch. Tonight, there's only one thing that can soothe such harm done to both my body and my mind. And that's scotch. Johnny Walker, single malt, green label scotch, to be precise.
All right. A fine choice. I may be sampling a little bit of your scotch there. Being...
With a natty row.
Being of weaker constitution, I will say that I am also drinking a fine natty bow.
So let me get this straight. You're diluting pure perfectness, basically, by itself, single malt, with something that was on the floor of a brewery that they pushed into a can.
No, I'm experiencing both ends of the spectrum. I like to think of it as a complete drinking experience. And look, if you look at the can, which, by the way, is the wrong color, it says, oh boy, what a beer.
Actually, it's the right color. It's purple.
Oh boy, what a beer.
It's purple. It is football season now.
All right. That is the drink of the week. Let's regain our composure here. Take a deep breath, take a big swig, and move on with the show.
I met a girl who sang the blues. And I asked her for some happy news, but she just smiled and turned away. I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before, but the man there said the music wouldn't play. And in the streets the children screamed, the lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken. And the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, they caught the last train for the coast the day the music died. And they were singing, bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. They were singing, bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die.
Welcome back to Bird's Eye View. A solemn day, as you said. In Birdland, in Mudville, Baltimore. Look, here's the situation. We had an entire show written up prior to tonight. And then we got home, started watching the game, and, you know, lo and behold, Orioles managed to get some hits. Game's up 4-2 at the time. And then tragedy hit, folks. Manny Machado went down, and this broadcast became null and void. So we're going to be discussing the mess that we were left with at the pile at our feet. Jake, why don't you start?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing to point out is that my medical degree has not yet come in the mail. I have not spent enough time in the Caribbean. So I don't want anyone to even for a moment believe that I know anything about what I'm talking about. However, when knees do those things, it isn't in the category of not good. It's deeply in the category of not good. Am I right there?
That sounds professionally correct.
You know, the thing is that you were right. We were going to talk about something totally different tonight. You know, despite a terrible series and basically the end of our postseason hopes, we were prepared to be a little positive, and it just doesn't seem possible now. I mean, there's this dark pallor over Orioles baseball right now. And the thing is that, you know, there are so many hopes put in Manny. And watching Manny Machado play baseball has been so amazing over the last year and a half, because he plays it at such a high level. He's got such a, oh, gee, shucks attitude about him. He's a bright spot in the future of the Orioles, because he's a player that you can look at and say, we can build a franchise around this guy. He can be a cornerstone at the corner infield position for us and play at a high level for a long time. And to see an injury of this nature happen to that guy is just crushing. It's just absolutely crushing.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is, we were building up steam coming into this podcast. This podcast wasn't going to be overly cheery. In fact, I actually posted on Twitter saying it's going to be a pretty depressing podcast. Be prepared for it tomorrow. Mainly from the fact of the Orioles squandered several opportunities this weekend. We're not even going to be able to get into the whole situation with the 18-inning game. I think we're just going to have to let that lie for the time being and come back to it at a later point. The fact of the matter is, we're looking, like you said, at the foundation of this team being altered dramatically. And the question really isn't so much again for 2013, but looking ahead to 2014 and whether this team actually still has their corner foundation.
Well, yeah, and again, we don't have a medical degree, but how bad does that injury look? You know, I think you have to look at it and you say, you know, once the information comes back, is this going to be the kind of injury that Manny Machado can come back from and be 100%? And there are really two ways to think about it. The first is that we live in the era of modern medicine, right? Modern medicine, which is amazing. You look at Adrian Peterson having a pretty bad knee injury himself, coming back and being the MVP.
Mariano Rivera last year.
Absolutely. I mean, and I hope this doesn't get too many snickers in the Baltimore area, but RG3.
Right.
There's that side that you can look at and you can say, you know what? We have the technology. We can rebuild him. We can make him stronger.
That's if Peter Angelus wants to spend $6 million.
But then there's that other side. There's that other side that you look at and you say, knees don't bend that way.
Yeah.
And it might be the type of deal that he doesn't come back to what he was. And that would be horrific in my mind. Because that doesn't just... It's not just that it kills a cornerstone foundation of the team. That means that whatever Manny Machado can be, there will always be that part of us as fans that will wonder, what could he have become?
Look, I'm not saying anything one way or the other, like you said, and we can't overreact to the situation, but the fact of the matter is, the Orioles' top two prospects over the past 2 years are now have severe medical injuries. You had Dylan Bundy earlier this season go out with Tommy John surgery, and Manny Machado has the possibility of having a major knee injury at this moment, with the possibility of being out 6 to 12 months if it's an ACL tear. Now, it could be, you know, Manny Machado, back when he was in Single A, had an issue with his kneecap popping out, and he had to be out for several weeks. But it wasn't a severe issue. It was just a matter of, you know, he had to be out for several weeks. It could be just a reoccurrence of that. Apparently, that's something that can commonly occur, and it just requires some surgery, and it's like a 3 to 4 month recovery time. Again, the fact of the matter is, till we get the MRI, anything, we just have to hope and pray that, you know, the foundation of the Orioles is not damaged going forward. Because if it is, it's going to put not just this franchise back in terms of taking a player off the field, but it's going to take a lot of the optimism that has been grown in Baltimore from 2012 and pretty much shoot it in the head.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't want to be overdramatic. You know, I mean, we did that whole there's no crying in baseball cold open thing and you know, all that. I don't want to be overdramatic here, but this is a big deal. You know, as an Orioles fan, any O's fan that watched that happen or saw it come over, you know, the internet or heard about it later or listened on the radio, that didn't feel a punch in the gut when they heard the Manny Machado got hurt, and you're not living in this world.
Well, let me ask you this question. Where were you when this moment happened?
I was actually putting one of my kids in the tub, so I didn't hear about
it. So your child is drowning right now.
I didn't hear about it live, but I saw something come up over my phone, and so then I went and looked at a replay, and you know, it hit me hard because I couldn't see it right away, and so all I could do was basically go off of what was going on Twitter. Right. And you know, like I was telling my wife, it was just like, oh my god, you know, Manny got hurt, and they don't know how bad it is.
You realize that they had this invention called DVR, and you can rewind games and fast forward games.
I'm well aware.
Okay,
I'm well aware.
Just want to make sure you're aware of this.
All right, so now that you've mocked me, where were you when you? This is like some great tragedy. Where were you when you hurt? But what was your experience?
My experience was I was making dinner and I was watching
through. So it's burned.
Yeah, it was burned. And I was watching into the living room and I saw him went down and I said, oh, this isn't good. Manny's down. Something just happened. He's grabbing his knee. Carrie's like, well, how bad is it? And I said, it looked to me like an ACL tear as soon as he went down. And we've seen plenty of ACL tears with Ladarius Webb going down last year that it certainly just popped right at me saying it's an ACL tear. He's going to be out for a significant period of time.
Paging Dr. Scott. Paging Dr. Scott.
Okay, look, I know that's not the case, but the situation is when someone goes down like that, you just think immediately worst case scenario.
Actually, not true. When he went down like that, I thought...
Thank you, Looney Tunes. But in all honesty, the situation is you think I thought the worst case scenario, and I still am thinking the worst case scenario that he's going to be out 6 to 12 months. And again, it's irrational. But as a person that's, you know, living and dying by this team, I'm going to basically make it the worst case possible situation so I can try to shield myself from the unexpected. I think it's human nature. My wife came in, saw the play, and my 3-year-old daughter came in, and both of them basically screamed no. And my daughter didn't cry, but my wife did cry, which just tells you how serious the situation is. I think, you know, I've hurt myself. You know, I've sprained an ankle. Never a tear, but as soon as Manny Machado hurts his knee, tears.
A little bit of something in your eye there?
Yeah. So, needless to say, at least I figured out who my daughter's real father is. So that's a positive. And apparently my daughter wants to go to Sunday's game now with a Get Well Manny Machado card to give it to him. Whew. So I'm glad that she's going to be able to see her daddy in person.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
What effect does an injury like this have on the team?
Look, in the dugout, people were just shell-shocked, really, of, oh my gosh, Machado just went down. And I don't know how this team is going to respond, especially after being swept by the Tampa Bay Rays.
Sure. Think back last year to the injury to Markakis. Markakis gets hit in the thumb, you know, breaks his thumb by the Yankees. You know, it's a big emotional loss for the team, but I really feel like Showalter and the rest of the team, again, playing for more at that point.
Right.
Tried to rally around that, tried to make it right for Markakis. Is there any way that the team can do anything of any consequence for this situation with Manny's injury?
Well, let me ask you this question. I'm having a tough time dealing with this, with the Machado situation, but I asked my wife, I said, which one do you think was more devastating, the Machado injury or the Markakis injury last year?
Are you asking me that question?
Yeah.
I definitely think that it's Machado.
Okay. See, I'm going to go with the Markakis injury, and here's the only reason why I say that is, to me, I see Machado as a 22-year-old, actually a 21-year-old, that is a really good possibility of coming back within a six-month period. There's been several players in that age group that he'd be able to come back within a six-month period, which means that he'd be back sometime around March and April of next year, even if it was an ACL tear. The situation with Markakis was a little bit more devastating for me. This is a player that had played his entire career and was so close to achieving something that he had worked his entire life for, and then it was just pretty much robbed away from him. And I'm telling you what, that hug that Buck gave to Markakis in the dugout of, I know how hard it is, I'm sorry, we'll try to get far enough to get you there. It just was, like I said, it was like a father and a son giving each other a hug and saying, it's okay, kid, I gotcha. Whereas this guy still has a possibility and potential in the future, and you know the future's bright, but the other question is, how much more opportunity do certain players get on this team? Markakis, Roberts, you know?
That's a very valid point, and I'm not arguing with you. I mean,
they're both reasonable
totally
things.
Valid.
Yeah.
But let me just play the opposite way and say that championships cannot be won in April and May, but they can be lost. And so facing the possibility of having either an injured Markakis in the early part of the 2014 season or a less effective Manny Machado, rather, in the early part of next year, that has a significant impact on building a momentum of consecutive non-losing seasons, of a playoff appearance in 2012 and a pretty good club in 2013, to move on in 2014 without one of your key pieces, or at least not 100% of one of your key pieces, if that comes to fruition, that hurts.
Yeah.
That hurts the club.
And again, I don't think it's just the aspect of looking at the club in terms of on-the-field performance. I think it also hurts this club in terms of community and fan base as well. Because
right. At this part of the season, with the Orioles all but screwing themselves out of the playoffs, if all we have to look forward to is, well, maybe next year, for one of the few legitimate chances we've had of saying we're going to be good next year,
right,
to have this hanging over us, whew.
Yeah.
All right. I had one last thought. Do you mind if I lay that on you?
Yeah, lay me on with your last thought, and then let's move on, because I'm already almost out of my drink because I'm so depressed right now.
This is my rant on jersey sales.
Okay.
I'm of the frame of mind that wearing a jersey with another man's name on it is kind of silly.
Even though you have a jersey with a name on it?
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
Even though I've got a jersey with a name on it?
That is very silly.
Okay.
I bought a...
I'll let Chris Davis know that you think he's silly.
No need to go there. No, I have a batting practice jersey with a blank back, and that's really more my speed. I bought a...
So like a bat boy.
Right.
Or a ball boy.
I think we can all both agree that I'm more a ball boy than a bat boy.
You're actually more of a ball girl, but...
Okay, fair enough. Fair point. I like the ponytail look. Anyway, I bought a Matt Wieters jersey.
Meters.
But it's we'll say it's less than legit, and the reason that I bought it was that it came at a price range, and
it fell off the back of a truck.
It may have
in China.
It may have. So anyway, my own personal thought about jerseys is that it's a little silly to wear another for a grown man to have another man's name on his back. It's just weird. But here's the thing. Based on this experience, if I know Baltimore and the Baltimore fan base, and if I think that this group of people is half as good as it is, number 13 jerseys should fly off the shelf.
As a collector's item?
As, I don't know if it's a sign of solidarity, a sign of support, or whatever, but if you are an Orioles fan and you go to the store and you're looking at the names on the backs and you say, what jersey am I going to buy? I feel like you should be buying 13 Machado jerseys at this point.
Or an E-brace.
Ouch. Gallows humor even now, Scott?
What can I say? I'm a dark, dark man. All my lovers, I will send to you.
All right, here we go with the regular show. Scott, let's get this off on a good start. Last week, we introduced our new segment, which is TWAT, which, as everyone knows, stands for This Week on the Twitter. That's T-W-O-T-T. This week on Twitter, I want to start with tonight. And, you know, some interesting things that I saw tonight was a lot of support and a lot of community. And that was people coming out almost instantly saying, you know, our best thoughts to Manny Machado. And I've got to give it to the Tampa Bay Rays. Their account, which I think is at Rays Baseball.
Yes.
Within minutes of the injury, tweeted out, you know, this isn't verbatim, but it's pretty close. We just want to say our best wishes to Manny Machado. And I thought to myself, that's really classy.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really classy thing. And as a...
It's a shame they can't play in a nicer stadium.
Right, right. It would have been a lot more meaningful coming from a club that played in a better stadium.
Right.
But no, as a fan that was, you know, in shock and wounded and upset, that was big.
Yeah, I'm glad that the guy that bangs the gong in the back sent that tweet out.
Absolutely. At least it wasn't the drummer in Cleveland. But it wasn't just Rays baseball. It was a lot of players, both on the Orioles and throughout baseball. And I feel bad singling them out because I know there are going to be a lot of other players. But, I mean, Will Middlebrooks, you know, for example, plays for the Boston Red Sox. Screw them. But you love to see that. You love to see that. The other thing tonight that was good on Twitter was that we've had so much negativity as O's fans, which we'll get to in a minute. But it was kind of a good place to go. You know, on the Twitters, as it were, to kind of have a sense of community, to vent, to feel support.
Yeah.
To, you know, react with horror together.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you saw this tweet, but Randy Wolf weighed in.
Did he really?
Yeah. He said, wishing the best to Manny Machado. Good luck. And, you know, I was just like, oh my God, Randy Wolf sighting. Unbelievable.
Randy Wolf is still alive. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. No, you get the best and the worst with Twitter. It was a great place for us to react collectively as O's fans. This week on Twitter, there's also been some negativity. And again, I'm going to start with tonight. First of all, Keith Law has a reputation. A lot of O's fans think that Keith Law is, we'll say unfairly rough on the Orioles. Particularly because he focuses on prospects and drafting and all that stuff. And that's an area where the Orioles really haven't excelled in the last few years. So fair or not, he has a reputation for, you know, quote-unquote, oh, he hates the Orioles. Tonight, he tweeted out a joke about the Orioles putting Hunter Harvey in bubble wrap or whatever, which some people felt was in poor taste. What's your call on that?
I actually didn't really see that big of a deal with it. I think people blew it out of proportion, and as much as I hate to hate Keith Law, I thought it was a little funny.
Yeah, that's a very decent and valid opinion. I think he should die in a fire.
Okay, that's fair.
All right. Also on Twitter this week, look, haters are going to hate. And, you know, on our Twitter feed and Bird's Eye View, we don't have as much of the riff-raff, if you will. But I saw a lot of tweets that were in reaction to other things where people were saying all week, God, I can't believe people are calling for the head of Buck Showalter. Dude, are people really tweeting out that Buck Showalter should be fired because the Orioles are falling out of contention?
There is a lot of people calling for that on Twitter, and there is a major post also on Orioles Hangout with people saying that Buck is not a championship-style manager.
These are people in real life.
Yes, these are people in real life that have nothing better to do than post on a message board.
These are people in real life that expect to be taken seriously?
Well, as seriously as someone that has a microphone and puts out a weekly podcast.
Okay, fair point. These are dumb people. These are dumb, dumb people.
Yeah. These are people that just don't realize how bad it was a few years ago. It's as simple as that.
Okay. There are also some folks that have been taking to the Twitter to react to a local quote-unquote media organization that loves
Pardon
to
me?
Troll. There are some people that are reacting to the Twitter account for a quote-unquote media organization in the Baltimore area that like to troll.
Media organization.
I use that term loosely.
Okay.
Here's the thing. There are some folks that I respect that do this, but if you hear one of the local media outlets trolling, going out of their way to be a dick to the Orioles because they can, the best thing to do is not to respond to that, not to give it attention. The best thing to do is ignore it. The better thing to do is to unfollow and pay no attention, because like a flame and oxygen, if you pay attention to that kind of thing, you validate it. So ignore it and let it go. Let that be a voice that gets quieter and quieter, and you won't have to worry about it.
It's true. If you just ignore something, it eventually goes away.
I've done my part by not clicking over to even see what was said.
Who?
Exactly. All right, and that is the twat for this week. Which brings us, Scott, to my favorite part of the program, which is...
The Brian Roberts Watch.
Oh, come on. A little enthusiasm. Scott!
The Brian Roberts Watch!
Yes! I love it. I love it. The Brian Roberts Watch for this week.
Should I go back to the previous one? The Brian Roberts Watch.
Yeah, it might be more appropriate. Look, Brian Roberts had 4 hits in 19 at-bats this week. He had... Well, he had 3 walks, all right, against 1 strikeout. That's fine. But it's a 2.11 average with a 3.18 on base percentage, 2.63 in the slugging, and an OPS of 5.81.
He's actually one of the better Orioles this week.
That does not validate him as having a good week. He drove in 2 runs. He had a double. He scored 2 runs. Brian Roberts did not have a good week. This Brian Roberts watch was a little sad. But, Scott, if I can take this even sadder into the Brian Roberts watch. Brian Roberts hit a home run.
Woo! 6.
Brian Roberts hit his 6th home run, and I couldn't help but ask myself, and I listened to it on the radio, I heard the call, is this the last home run I'm going to hear or see or you know, be a part of? Is this the last Brian Roberts Oriole home run?
No.
No?
No.
All right, well, let's take that a step further. Do you think he's going to hit more this season?
Yes.
Okay. I've gotten to the point with Brian Roberts that I'm trying to take it all in because I've made no bones about the fact that I'm a Brian Roberts fan. I'm trying to enjoy the very last of what I'm going to get from him, because that makes me think, you know, what happens at the end of this year? What happens next year? Now, you think he's going to hit more home runs this year, and that's all good and fine.
I do.
All right. I'm willing to explore that, but let me ask you. If the Orioles find themselves eliminated, or if they find themselves somehow short on infielders, are we going to start seeing Jonathan Scope play second base?
No.
So you think that Buck Showalter will give playing time to Brian Roberts, even if they're meaningless games, rather than take a look at Jonathan Scope to see what he's got for next year?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you think that he's going to do that to try to win ball games or be out of a loyalty?
Loyalty.
Because he likes our guys.
He likes our guys.
All right. I'm not sure that I can disagree that it will happen that way, but I disagree with that's the way it should be done. I think that you'll see the regular third baseman at this point become Ryan Flaherty. I think that Alexi Cassia is going to be unavailable for a little while.
Yep.
I think you might see a few games where Brian Roberts gets DH'd and Jonathan Scope plays second base, or vice versa, or a situation in which Jonathan Scope plays second base and Brian Roberts gets a couple days off.
I can definitely see that. I just think Brian Roberts will play more of those games.
Okay. I hope you're right. That brings us then to what happens
next. I also think they want to see more of Danny Valencia.
Okay, okay. So you're saying that the DH slot is null?
I think the DH spot, but also the fact that they're going to want to see how Valencia can do at third base is a possibility.
Okay. That, you know, I had not considered that. That is a good point.
But as a corner infielder, Valencia has the ability to play third base and also first base, so he could technically be Chris Davis's backup for next year. Valencia's going to come cheap. He demonstrated his ability to hit very well against left-handers at
the for a month.
For a month. But that's better than any Oriole was able to do for pretty much the entire year. So, you know, I think he takes the Wilson Bedemeat position of this team for next year.
He played third, he played first, he played outfield, he played...
Yeah, well, he plays third, he played first, he played DH, and then we'll see what else he can actually do.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk about next year for the Brian Roberts watch. What happens to him? Well, I mean, what are our options?
Well, I hate to bring up a bad point, but I think it actually comes back to what's going on with Manny Machado.
How so?
I think the fact of the matter is, if you're going to take a infield reserve and put them into third base, I think that Buck is going to want to have somebody else on the bench, and I think the fact of the matter is Brian Roberts is going to be the second baseman for this team.
Okay.
I also don't think Jonathan Scope is your starting second baseman next year. If that was the case, he'd be playing a lot more right now. I think the Orioles still want to see what he can do in AAA with a perfectly healthy condition. Could we see him later in the season next year? Absolutely. I just don't think his time is going to start next year. So I said a few weeks ago, I don't think we expect to see Brian Roberts back. I have changed my story after tonight. I think we see Brian Roberts back now.
All right, my opinion is that they bring Brian Roberts back with a chance to compete for the second base job in spring training, with the understanding that he may lose to Jonathan Scope. Now, I think you bring a good point about the fact that if you're going to have a guy like Ryan Flaherty getting the majority of the starts at third, that opens up a spot for Brian Roberts to play. I think it's definitely more of the Orioles' MO to give the job, at least in the short term, to a guy like Ryan Flaherty, rather than to go out and get a part-time solution like a Kevin Youkilis or something of that nature. You'd love to see them go out and try to make a move that's going to actually help them, but it's just not the way the Orioles do it, right? And again, it's very possible that they could do something like roll the dice and have Danny Valencia play third base and try to get a DH or something like that. But you're right. I think we're going to see Ryan Flaherty playing third base, which leaves at least the hope of an opening at second.
And I know deep down in all of our hearts, we just want to see Mark Reynolds back there at third base.
No. Okay. No, we don't want to see that. I think that we're going to see the let's see approach of bringing him back for spring training to see if he can compete. I mean, either that or he's going to go to another club. Because I don't think...
Not going to happen.
I don't think you can bring Brian Roberts back as a reserve. I don't think he's flexible enough. I don't think he brings enough...
Oh, he's definitely not flexible enough.
He doesn't have the arm. He doesn't have the range. He can't play another position besides second base, effectively. Right. Even in short stints, he becomes a liability. So the question is really, does he retire an Oriole, or does he hang around for an extra couple of years? Honestly, I think with the contract that he's got, he doesn't have to work again. He's either going to go home, retire to his beautiful wife and his new child, or the Orioles are going to invite him back to compete for that spot. You know, we'll see.
Okay. We'll see what happens. After tonight, I'm going to say he's coming back, but that's contingent on Manny Machado not being available until April or May of that season.
All right, with that, let's go ahead and let's take a look a little more globally as to what's going on with the Orioles.
Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something wrong here, there can be no deal. Is changing, or maybe we just stop trying.
folks, something has died, and it is the Orioles' playoff hopes. In fact, it was dead well before even tonight. Frankly, I thought it had died almost when the Orioles lost that 18th inning game. It just seemed like the magic that was supposed to be there just wasn't going to happen this season. And it's been a recurring theme through this season to me is so close, so close. Maybe next time. And the 18th inning game really exemplified that of having, what, an 0-53, three hits during that entire series between the 7th inning to 18th inning. Just a deplorable situation with no Orioles magic. And then being one hit pretty much throughout the entire game for Saturday's game. One hit throughout the most of the game on Sunday's game. And, well, let's not even get into tonight because the offense finally showed up, but there was other disasters that occurred.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. The thing that struck me about this, the Red Sox series, I thought the magic was back.
Yeah.
You know, the Orioles won games that they really shouldn't have won. They were close games with one of the best teams in the league, and the Orioles found a way to win 2 of 3 to keep their playoff hopes alive. Slim, but alive.
Right.
And I thought, the magic's back, baby.
Clutch hitting.
Yep. You're right. And then we had that first game with the Tampa Bay Rays, who, again, I will say, probably a better team right now.
Right.
Certainly a team that has more momentum going into the series. The Orioles' backs were up against the wall. And so what happened? They took the game into extras. Then they took the game into ridiculous extras. Then they took the game into really ridiculous extras. And all I could think was, 2012 Magic, baby. We're back. Here we are, back in Seattle. We're going to have an 18-inning game. We're going to win. And then we didn't.
But we didn't.
And as soon as that happened, I was worried about us losing more than one game based on the 18-inning loss, depleting the bullpen, momentum, just the gut wrench of that loss carrying over. And I'm not saying that that's what happened, but that certainly seems to be how it played out. The Orioles took a very brutal loss in Game 1 of this series and never recovered.
Well, let's link back to that game, too. That game had several key situations where the Orioles could have gone up and scored more runs earlier in that game. And the Orioles were never really able to. It's not like they had a bad offensive game earlier in the game. It's just that they couldn't capitalize in that sixth inning in order to get more runs. And then the seventh inning hit, and then there were no hits past that point, really. And it was almost as if the bats were lost, and there was a curse put on them, basically.
You know, it's so funny because for the longest time this season, the offense hasn't been the problem. The problem has been starting pitching, and then at one point during the season, the problem was that the bullpen couldn't hang on. A bullpen that we've come to expect such good things from based on their performance in 2012. But as of late, and especially in this Tampa Bay series, you can see that the offense is the problem. And Scott, one of the factors that I think plays in here is that the Orioles have the most starters in the league who have played 150-plus games. If you ask me, those guys look gassed.
Yeah.
And not just like running out of gas. I mean like Carter-era gas rations. I mean, no gas getting in.
Gotcha.
You look at Jones and Wieters, and you look at, even before tonight, Machado.
Right.
Hardy. Those guys in their at-bats look like they're... Davis, even. Look like they're just barely hanging on. I used to complain that they looked like they didn't have an approach, but I wonder if they just don't have anything left to draw back on.
Right. So this is on you, Brady Anderson. You're on notice. You need to get that conditioning down. You're going to invite everybody over for a slumber party at your house, bang some models, and then get the conditioning going.
Here's my question, Scott. Does that highlight a problem with this team that we've overlooked in the fact that our starters are good, but the depth on this team with our secondary players, with our bench, is such that it requires our good starters to go all the time and go 110%. I'm asking you, if we had a deeper bench, if we had more complementary players of value, do you think that we could afford to do things like give Adam Jones as much time as he'll take off, or give J.J. Hardy a couple days off, or get Manny Machado some rest? Matt Wieters could certainly use the rest. Is there such a drop-off between our starters and whatever we've got left on the bench that would have been detrimental to go that approach?
Yeah, well, I think whenever you replace players like Adam Jones, Chris Davis, Manny Machado, I think that you have a massive drop-off, even if they were on any other team, I don't really think you can be taking a bench player and substitute them in willy-nilly and just say they're going to be exactly the same replacement value. I, you know, coming back tonight, and I don't want to keep harping on the Machado injury, but the one name that popped in my head, and I'm going to do a grand reveal for you tonight. Ready? I'm going to open it up. Ready?
Wow.
Yeah. I know, they're pretty big, aren't they?
Yeah. Scott's flashing the Cal Ripken Iron Man t-shirt at me.
No, but in all honesty, the name that really popped in my head tonight after the Machado aspect was Ripken. The fact of the matter is, this just exemplifies in my head how amazing that streak actually was to be able to go through an entire career without having that issue of turning an ankle or having a knee injury or anything like that. It was also the fact of the matter of he was able to play consecutive games through those seasons. And, you know, he had his ups and his downs, but there was never the question of whether he was actually gassed at the end of the season.
Sure.
Argument could also be made that he really wasn't playing competitive baseball many seasons either, only having to play, you had the 83 season, you had the 94 season, and you had the 96 and 97 season where they really posted winning records.
89.
Okay, 89. I'll give you 89, yeah. Okay, that's fair.
The thing is, I hate to do this.
Can I zipper back up now?
Yes, please. Okay. Please. You know how much some of our Twitter followers like it when we talk about you zipping up.
Yeah.
The one thing that struck me is that Terry Francona gave a quote at some point that if he had nine Dustin Pedroias, he could win a championship. And I kind of feel like it takes more than nine. You know, the Orioles have a solid nine. They really do. But I think that organizational depth, a flexible roster, and a bench that can... We don't need all-stars in the bench, but we need a bench that doesn't have such dramatic drop-offs that we have now.
Right.
And I think if we had that, we would be in a better position at the end of the season to compete. I'm not trying to make excuses for these guys. I'm just saying, you know, I've always said the Orioles are better this year on paper than they were last year. Maybe I'm just looking at the starters and saying that. The other thing... about this series is that as soon as Machado got hurt today, you knew they were going to blow that lead.
Yeah.
It was really an emotional punch that they could not recover from. You know, at that point, the Rays had them on the ropes, and there was just no way that the Orioles were going to be able to overcome that.
Let's get past today's game. I'm not concerned about today's game. Like I said, this season was over well before today's game even happened. The fact of the matter is the Orioles were far enough out at the beginning of today's game to even be considered legitimate shots to get a wild card position. The question that I have, and I don't want to answer it right now, I want to wait for this week, is, was 2013 a successful season? I'm going to let Twitter ponder over that and let us know. What do you think? Do you think 2013 was a successful season? Me and Jake will weigh on it next week. But we want to know what the Twitterverse has to say. 2013, successful season or not?
All right, so since you're going to muzzle me
on
the success question, there is one more item from the 2013 season that I want to touch on, and that's actually a tweet, and I pulled this out of twat.
Okay.
Because I wanted to make sure we talked about it here. And that was actually a tweet that came out earlier in the week by the O's Sunglasses guy.
Yep.
And he tweeted out something that at the time... I had some negative feelings about, but he said, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, he basically said, all right, now that we're out of it, this season is really about, or this homestand coming up, is really about going and thanking the team and being supportive. And at the time, it was hard for me to hear that and say, yeah, let's do that. I was more in the angry fan zone. But looking at it now, I wonder if he's not right. And if you think about it, this is the fan base that greeted the losers of the ALDS series at 1 in the morning at the stadium with 1,000-plus strong, you know, for giving Baltimore whatever they had to give. I wonder if this isn't the type of fan base that will, you know, put asses in the seats in this last homestand as a sign of support, as a sign of solidarity, as... a fan base that just wants to enjoy the last bit of this 2013 season. I mean, what do you think that we're going to see from crowds against Toronto and Boston?
You know what I think we're going to see?
What?
I don't think it's so much what we're going to see. I think it's what we're going to hear. And you know what we're going to hear?
When it comes to twisting, I just got to keep insisting. Oh, baby, you sure do swing.
When it comes to twisting, I just got to keep insisting. Oh, daddy, hey, you are the king.
Baby, you've got me beat up and down, inside out and across. Oh, yeah.
But in the middle of the night, when the moon is shining bright, you're the boss.
Okay, two things I don't like here. Two things. First, that silence ploy, not cool. Not cool. Second thing, was that Team Elvis I heard?
It was Team Elvis, and that was silence you heard before it.
All right, that was Team Elvis. That means that I did not win
Fantasy Lost again.
Scott, that brings you to within one.
That's right.
That closes the gap to 6-5 for Fantasy Boston. So we've been doing that. And damn it, Scott, that means that if you win next week, you will have pulled into a tie and come up with a monumental comeback. I mean, simply monumental. If the Orioles cannot provide us with drama at the end of the season...
I'm your drama boy.
I think you may have done it all by yourself. All right, fine. I lost this week. Remind everyone of what it was that we were talking about and how we both did.
Sure. Well, I actually picked the, what was it, fantasy stat of WBP or WBA.
Okay, the fact that you don't know makes me think that you're just making this up.
It was WPA.
Okay.
Which is win probability added from Fangraphs. And needless to say, it wasn't a very good week from the Orioles standpoint. Nobody really had a positive value in terms of WPA, which kind of explains why it was such a terrible week.
There were no probable wins.
Yeah. Well, there was just a lot more negatives, more than positive. So I picked Chris Davis, who had a negative 0.18, and you picked Adam Jones, who had a negative 0.22.
Wait a minute. So I didn't realize we could do a negative. So Adam Jones was deemed as having a negative impact on wins this week.
Yes.
Wow.
So was Chris Davis.
Jeez. This was a rough week.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you don't hit with players on base or consistently strike out.
Ugh. Okay, so win probability added was not our stat this week.
You know who had the highest win probability added this week?
Was it Steve Clevenger?
It was Steve Clevenger.
Pigtown's pride and joy, Steve
exactly.
Clevenger. All right, Scott, what jewel have you for us this week for Fantasy Boss?
All right, I'm going to keep it nice and simple.
Okay, I like
it. I feel like it has to be simple this week in order to give both of us a legitimate shot.
I like the fact that you're calling me a simpleton without calling me a simpleton. I'm going to take that. That's fine.
Yes.
I like where your head's at. What do you have for us?
I'm going to go with just straight hits. Not batting average, just hits.
Huh. Wow.
I figured you could appreciate this one.
That is so rough because nobody is hitting right now.
Correct.
Wow.
I figured that'd be a great way to end it for this segment for this season. Which is brought to you by FanDuel.com. That's right, individuals. If you want to wager on such extremely lucrative offers like the Orioles offense, you should go to FanDuel.com. So anyway, Jake.
Best part about FanDuel.com, by the way, is you can bet real money if you want to. But if you're like me and you're cheap and you just like bet a dollar or two at a time just to have some fun, FanDuel can both accommodate that. They can accommodate games that you play where there's no money on the line. But what's the fun in that? Put a little something on it. Or, you know, if you're like Scott and you want to throw the big bucks around, FanDuel's got everything there for you.
Exactly. So, Jake, who's going to lead this team in hits next week?
Are you telling me that I can't stall anymore?
No, I can't stall anymore.
All right, hits.
Hits.
Hits this week.
I think it's Manny Machado, by the way. That's who you should be calling for.
All right. For the next 7 days, Scott?
Yes.
I'm going to let it ride.
Okay.
I'm going to be on the Brian Roberts watch.
Okay. I'm glad that you were thinking that, because that's actually, I was going to go sentimental and go that way as well. Instead of that, I am going to go with, I'm going to go with Nate McClouth.
Ooh, okay. That is an interesting choice. Yes. That is definitely an interesting choice.
It was either going to be Nate McClouth or J.J. Hardy.
See, I thought that if you were going the sentimental route, I thought you were going to take Matt Wieters, since you thought he was going to be in top five of MVP vote.
We're not going to talk about that. So, moving on, speaking of Matt Wieters, I think it's time for my favorite segment, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly.
All right, here we are. It is time indeed for The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. And I always like to get the last word to Scott, because frankly he's better at this segment than I am. And so I'm going to start with my good. And my good this week, no lie, and I'm not bullshitting you here, TJ McFarland. I appreciate the week that TJ McFarland has had. He's appeared in 3 games, 4 innings pitched, he's given up 3 hits, and more importantly, no earned runs. And here's the thing about TJ McFarland's week. It hasn't been mop-up duty. He's come in real situations, in high-leverage situations, and he's gotten outs. He's gotten outs against lefties, he's gotten outs against righties, and TJ McFarland looks like a real pitcher. He's starting to throw a little bit harder, and I say a little bit, like, he actually cracked 91. You know what I mean? It hasn't been an 86-mile-an-hour fastball. He's in the 89 to 90 range. Good deception on his breaking pitches. Plus, I mean, let's face it, the stash is back. And if you can throw a good stash like that on the mound, you're going to get a good from me more times than not. So this week, for me, TJ McFarland.
Okay. I like the stash. I can tip my cap to it. I know the spastic really like the stash. But my good for the week, if we're going to talk about filthy dominating stuff, it's got to be Kevin the Gassman Gossman. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he came out there and absolutely dominated for 2 innings against the Red Sox. Kevin Gossman is absolutely filthy. Pitched 4 innings, 7 strikeouts, 143 average, 0.50 whip. Okay, look, TJ McFarland, yeah, he did okay. But the fact of the matter is, batters had a 231 average against him. He had a 1.75 whip. He just is not the same quality pitcher that Kevin Gossman is out there on the mound. Let's focus on the future. Yes, there's a possibility Manny Machado could be sidelined. But the fact of the matter is, with players like Kevin Gossman in the wings, I'm still optimistic that Birdland has hope.
All right. Can't argue that Kevin Gossman had a great, great week. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Let me switch over to bad.
Okay.
I'm again going to go to the pitching staff, and I'm going to target Francisco Rodriguez. K-Rod, if you will. K-Rod in 1.2 innings pitched. Allowed 4 hits. Unfortunately, 2 of those were, for some runs. He gave up 2 earned runs in those appearances, and that's just no good. He's giving up costly runs. He's almost the forgotten man in the bullpen. Like, he came in the other day and was like, oh, that's right, we have K-Rod. That's awesome. He had a 2.40 whip. It's just no good. He was supposed to be the guy that would come in and stabilize the back end of the bullpen, who could replace a struggling Jim Johnson. And instead, he's bad this week. I have nothing good to say about him.
Okay. You done?
I'm done.
All right, my bad for the week has to go to Orioles Public Relations. They have done an absolutely horrible job throughout September, and including coming up to this week, without building any momentum coming into the last series. Okay, as soon as the Orioles won 2 out of 3 in the Red Sox, they should have gone into full-blown hype mode and gotten this team fired up and the fan base fired up to go and watch this game. The fact of the matter is, I went into Friday's game with very few people talking to me about Friday's game and more people focused about the Ravens and the Texans. Yes, I realized the Ravens and Texans was a huge story. Yes, I realized Ray was coming back to enter the Ring of Honor. But the fact of the matter is, the Orioles were fighting for their playoff hope. And the only thing that Orioles PR has been able to offer so far this September is buckle back up. Thank you for introducing one word.
Are you not buckling back up?
I'm buckling back up by having three tickets this week, so I'm going Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. But here's the fact
that... So it was click it and ticket.
Yeah, so here's the situation, though, is Orioles PR has done such a poor job in bringing the fan base back and continually bringing it back. They did a great job last year of getting the fans back into the stadium and getting that playoff crowd atmosphere throughout September, and there has been nothing like that. Promotion-wise, this whole aspect of, you know, Fan Appreciation Week is crap. I look at the Red Sox the last week they were in town when we were playing them, and they had the Dollar Beard Night. That's a great promotion. I mean,
dude, their beards are weird.
I understand that, but in all honesty, a dollar ticket to, if you're wearing a beard, even if it's a fake beard, is a great promotion. I saw Orioles fans there that had beards on just to get into the stadium for $1 tickets. It's a great move by PR for a first place team, knowing that, hey, let's get the people in the stands because they're going to come in here, they're going to buy concessions, they're going to buy merchandise, and heck, who knows, maybe they'll come back and buy additional tickets or put down a season ticket deposit because they're going to make a memory. The Orioles have squandered that opportunity, and instead, they're going to leave the possibility of having a bitter taste in people's mouth for 2013, and all that momentum they had of getting additional season tickets for 2013 is going to be squandered for 2014. The fact of the matter is, and I'm not supposed to say the fact of the matter is, but that's okay. Situation is, the Orioles fired one of their individuals that basically was in charge of basically bringing in businesses. So we already know that businesses have not come in and bought the luxury boxes or the season tickets like the Orioles were expecting. If you're not going to treat the common fan with some decency and give them discounted tickets, especially this week coming up, shame on you, Orioles. You're shooting yourself in the foot. You can expect 15 to 20,000 people attendance throughout the Blue Jays series. And for the Red Sox series, you're going to be looking at 30,000 plus, with 15,000 of them being Red Sox Nation. Congratulations, Orioles. You're back to where you were in 2011. Step up the pace. This isn't hard. Me and Jake, we're willing to work for pennies on the dollar. Put us in charge of promotions. We can make things happen.
This is why you go second, by the way.
Yeah.
You put my good and bad to the ugly to shame. Yes, yes, ditto, ditto, and ditto.
Okay, go ahead, you're ugly.
All right, my ugly for this week is the Orioles offense. Put it on a milk carton. Have you seen it?
No.
Me neither.
It's ALDS all over again.
No, no, that's being totally unfair to the ALDS performance of 2012.
Yeah.
The best hitter this week for the Baltimore Orioles was Matt Wieters. Your MVP vote, Matt Wieters, had 5 hits and 22 at-bats. He batted a crisp 227 and was the best of the bunch. The Orioles in the Rays series could not put runs together, period. Could not get hits together, period. This is a team that's struggling to score runs. We talked about the fact that maybe they're tiring out, but regardless of what it is, we joked about the clutch stat. I can't even imagine what their clutch stat is at this point. The Orioles offense is not getting it done. You have nobody save Steve Clevenger, who went 1-for-3 and is therefore a small sample size issue. You have nobody batting even in 250 range. Everyone is just clinking around the Mendoza line. And you have several guys, key guys, that are far below it. Chris Davis batting 143. Nate McLouth batting 105. Manny Machado batting 148. It's just ugly. Up and down the lineup. In the most crucial part of the season, win or go home, the Orioles offense is making them go home. And for that, they are ugly this week.
Okay. Well, I actually have a special guest for the ugly segment for me. So I'm going to turn it over to a special guest that I have personally calling in. Dave from Salisbury called in, and he's got his ugly for the week. Can we get him online?
I'm so frightened about what's happening right now. Go. Yes.
Okay, one second. I'm going to try to get him in. Good afternoon, Jake. How's it going? My ugly for the week has to be the first base for the Tampa Bay Rays. The fact of the matter is that base wasn't regulation size. That clearly caused Manny Machado to trip over it and cause his knee to pop out. And I just don't expect that kind of cheating from the Tampa Bay Rays. Aren't you glad I go last now?
Are you done?
Yeah, I think I'm done now.
I just want everybody to know, we don't get together and talk about what the good, the bad, the ugly is going to be before we do this. I am as disappointed, listener, as you are right now.
Look, I guarantee you we are going to hear conspiracy theories galore. And people questioning, I mean, there was already, I'm going to go back to Twat really quickly, and there are people questioning why Manny Machado was in this game because it was a quote-unquote meaningless game. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous that people are basically calling this a meaningless game and people basically questioning such insane aspects like that. That's as bad as Dave from Salisbury calling up and saying, oh, the base is in regulation, or the other team is cheating, or the Orioles aren't trying hard enough to win baseball games. Orioles Nation, you are my ugly for this week. The fact of the matter is, you calling out Buck Showalter, you questioning whether Manny Machado should be playing tonight, and your vile attempts of basically ignoring the Orioles and focusing entirely on the Ravens, you are ugly. And you, Baltimore, you're on notice.
Wow. Wow. You know, that ugly, which started so poorly, has ended with such a flourish that I'm fully behind you, minus the whole...
Dave from Salisbury?
Behind the whole theater thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, don't judge me for my theater. That's the pot calling the kettle black right there.
Scott, we are running very, very low on people's patience as well as time at this point. So
let's bring on some Pirates of Penzance.
I think we need to roll right in to blowing the save.
Okay.
And with that, first of all, we need to give a reminder of how people can get in touch with us at the show. Obviously, we want you to tweet us at BirdseyeView, B-A-L. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. That really helps the show and helps us grow, helps get some eyeballs. We really appreciate a rating and a comment, if you'd be so kind. Also, don't be afraid to write us an email, contact@birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. Secondly, Scott, speaking of blowing the save, I blew it last week. Totally blew it.
Did you?
We introduced the whole the twat segment, and one of the things that we were going to cover was the approach we were going to take here at Bird's Eye View to both the off season and to Raven season, and I just blew right through it. I mean, it just rolled right on. So how are we going to do that?
All right, so we've been giving this consideration. And since people love to hear our voices so much, well, not really, we're going to take a somewhat of a break. Last year, we basically did about once a month, and we did it for key areas. This year, I think we're going to break it out to doing it twice a month. And that twice a month is going to be broken down to one portion of the month is going to be for the Ravens, and one portion of the month is going to be for the Orioles.
So basically, every other week, and then every other show in that every other week schedule will be one Orioles-related podcast, and then the next will be a Ravens-related podcast.
Yeah, week two, week four, Ravens-Orioles.
Gotcha.
Week six, week eight, Ravens-Orioles, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, so that'll give us a little bit of opportunity to check in with our boys in purple and black. You know, Bird's Eye View clearly was left a little ambiguous for a reason, but it'll also give us the opportunity to check in on off-season moves, the hot stove, winter meetings, you name it.
And again, to remind individuals, we are not here to break news or to be your experts or your fantasy experts or your statisticians. We are here just to be the common fan in the stands with you and shedding light on what we're thinking. So we want you to let us know what you're thinking so that we can comment, approve, or mock you as we see fit.
Basically, what you're saying is that this is the source for baseless opinion and for a lack of insight.
It's audio Twitter, folks. It's as simple as that.
Ouch. You wound me, sir.
Except instead of 140 characters, we're like at 1.8 gazillion characters now because of how much Jay talks. But that's another topic for another day. So with that, we have a 3-game series coming up against the Blue Jays, a fairly meaningless series, but In all honesty, the Orioles do need to pull out one game in order to get their winning record. In my opinion, we're playing for 85 wins. We're playing for 85 wins. And the reason I say that is we come back to the Tampa Bay Rays when the Tampa Bay Rays went and got to the World Series. And they came back the next season and got 85 wins. I think if we can get to 85 wins, it exemplifies in my head that we're just as good as that team, and we are establishing a baseline foundation with a bunch of young players that have the possibility to form a nucleus that can get this team to turn around. The only other thing I can say is hopes and prayers go out to Manny Machado. The best of luck to him. Hopefully it's not too severe. If it is, Baltimore, it's going to be a long offseason.
And on that rosy note, I will bid you a fond adieu adieu.
Drink up, Baltimore. It's going to be a long week.
Bird's Eye View is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com. BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
Thanks for listening!